So here's what we need to do. In order to be able to appreciate this next part of the sugya, I think we need to understand a little bit better the concept of shibudim. So we have been explaining more or less that a shibud is a lien, but where exactly and how exactly that lien works is not 100% simple, but it's going to become very, very nogeya as we look at this sugya. So for that, I gave you perhaps one of the most famous sugyos, certainly in Bava Basra, and perhaps in all of Shas, about shibudim on the Gemara and Daf Kuf Ayin Heyem. I was going on to Kuf Ayin Heyem, please. So let's look at that sugya together. I hope you had a chance to begin that sugya this morning. And once we understand that, I think we'll have a much, much better appreciation of the rest of our sugya as it develops. Okay? We're good? Oh, by the way, I think there's a midterm next week. I'll let you know more about that. I got an email from the office that there's a midterm next week. So I'll have to figure that out later. Okay, here we go. On that note, I'm well aware. Says the Gemara, Kuf Ayin Hei Omid Aleph. Kuf Ayin Hei Omid Aleph. Okay. Says the Mishnah, Hamal Ves Chaveru Mishtar Goy Ve Minachos Mishubadim. Hamal Ves Chaveru Mishtar Goy Ve Minachos Mishubadim. What does that mean? If you, the Mishnah Kuf Ayin Hei Omid Aleph, you should have two pages there, one Kuf Ayin Hei Omid Aleph, one Kuf Ayin Hei Omid Aleph. So toward the bottom of Kuf Ayin Hei, it says Masnisin. So Hamal Ves Chaveru Mishtar, if you lend money to your friend with a shtar, Gove Minachasim Mishu Avodin. What does that mean, Rabbi Osai?
Collect from the lien property.
You collect from the lien property. When do you collect from the lien property?
Nothing to give you.
Oh, right? So again, the chiddush of the lien is that the lien remains even after the land has changed hands. Right, which is why Rashi throws in one word on Mishubadin, the last word of Rashi on the page, Mechurin. The chiddush is that after they are sold. After they are sold. We know what a bachlov gets if it's coming from land, when he's coming from the borrower himself, you know that he gets bainanus. That's what he's going to have to give him. We don't have to talk about liens. But the chiddush is that even after it leaves his hand, he's still going to be able to collect from that piece of land. Is he able to collect from that piece of land, which is now sold, so it's in the hands of a third party? Is he allowed to collect from that piece of land first?
It's not clear right now.
That is correct. It's not clear right now. We will see later on that you're not allowed to. That the rule is that you're not going to be gove from nechasim mishubadim b'makom sheyesh b'nei chorin. When there is free property, meaning things that belong to the borrower and in his own possession, those are going to be the ones that we collect from first. So here we said that if you settle it with a shtar, what is a shtar? What is a document?
Two pieces of paper.
What does it say on the piece of paper?
It's an agreement that the borrower owes the lender money, and there are eidim who are witnessing this taking place.
Correct. Very, very, very significant, and we'll see how it becomes significant soon. A shtar tells a story, right? So you have a document, and there are a few parts of the shtar that are going to be very significant. You have a date, which is going to become significant later on in our sugya, but usually a shtar has a date on it. The shtar then tells the story of whatever happened, right? On such and such a date, Svi Moshe lent $1,000 to Eitan. Okay? And then, on the bottom, there are going to be Chasimos, two signatures of Eden. Two signatures of Eden. If you have a shtar that does not have Eden on it, that shtar is
worthless.
Worthless.
Why? Why can't you sign it?
Maybe yes. But you don't have signatures. At least if you don't have any signatures on it. If you have the person himself signed on it, that'll be it. Yes. So again, the chiddush of ishtar is that a shtar basically has the same power as if the edim that were written on the shtar told us the story. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin writes that edim achasumim al shtar kemishenachkira edusam beis din domim. Edim that are signed on a shtar are as if they came to Beis Din and Beis Din ascertained that what they're saying is true. Obviously, the same way it's possible that two edim are lying. They could have forged chasimos as well. But again, we don't assume that. The same way we don't assume that two people are lying when they come to Beis Din, we don't assume that. So the chiddush of Ishtar is that Ishtar tells a story. The power of Ishtar comes from the chasimos. Comes from the fact that there are edim that are signed on it. Says the Mishnah Chiddush.
Wait, so you can make a shtar, and I can just get two people here to sign it, and then...
Well, yes and no. The assumption is, and the way the shtar is normally written, it's written as harin, you know, us who are signed below, saw Simosha lend $1,000 to Eitan. Meaning, you had to have seen it. You had to be signing on what you saw. So for me just to go over here and say, oh, can you sign over here? That would be the equivalent of basically a forged. Again, because you didn't see it. The point is that you are saying that I saw, I witnessed what happened. The chiddush of the shtar, is that it's acceptable in Beis Din, even though it's written. Normally, and again, this is a little bit of an aside, normally written testimony is not valid in Beis Din. Right? I can't submit a deposition or an affidavit that lists what I saw. I can't send that to Beis Din. It's exeris hakasav of the pihem, from their mouths, velomi piksavam, not from what they have written. There is a chiddush, where it comes from, again, much bigger discussion. There's a chiddush of a shtar, that a shtar has the ability with two edim signed on it to be fully acceptable in Beis Din. Yeah.
And that teaches that you could take the shorbet?
No.
So what does it teach? What is the chiddush again?
The chiddush right now is that if I walk into Beis Din and I have a shtar that says that you lent to me $1,000 and you say I did not, I don't owe you anything, Beis Din will say, you got a shtar. And the shtar is as if there are two witnesses right here that are testifying that you owe the money. That's the chiddush of the shtar. The chiddush of our Mishnah is that not only is shtar good, but shtar is so good, we'll have to understand later why, as the Gemara discusses, but the shtar is so good that it even creates a lien. And you're even able to collect a loan that was made with a shtar from land that is now sold. Again, just important to keep in mind, there are three players in the, right, we have the borrower, or the lova, we have the lender, who's the malva, and again, it's going to be confusing later on, I mentioned the guys yesterday, malva and milva have the exact same spelling and are often used in the concept. They have a different meaning. The malva is the lender. The milva is the loan itself. So if you have a milva bishtar, means a loan that was done through a shtar. So it's one of the situations where knowing a little bit of grammar will save you at least embarrassment, but certainly maybe you can be able to understand it. Then this is just important to just keep in mind. There's a third party here. Right, then we also have the buyer, the person, right? And this is the nechasim. This is the nechasim mishubadim. This is the property of the borrower that has been purchased by somebody else. So the original deal is only between borrower and lender. Right? This is not a classic. Just to keep everything clear, there is a such concept of a guarantor. Right? If you take out a big loan, then you know if Timosha was lending the kind of money that he wishes he was lending, then he would probably require, besides Eitan signing that it was the money, I want you to have Shiloh sign on it that if you can't pay, he's going to pay.
A
It's called a guarantor. That's a guarantor.
Is it Hebrew?
It's called an arev. You do not, but you can insist on having a guarantor. And it works. If you do have somebody sign on that I am an arev on the shtar, he signs on that I am a guarantor, that there is a halacha concept like that.
Not a guarantor, a guarantor?
Yeah, again, you can, within money, you can probably do anything you want. But again, the point is that this guy over here is not the guarantor. This is the guy who is not involved at all in the loan that took place over here. He just happened to purchase the land that the borrower had owned at the time, so there is a potential lien on that piece of land. But he was not a... It's not like he agreed from the beginning that I am going to make sure that your loan is covered.
You have to disclose it to him?
That's going to be what the Gemara is going to try to figure out. How exactly does this work? How does this work? So again, so the first din, there are three important dinim in the Mishnah, and it's through understanding these three dinim that we'll be able to understand how these shivudim are working. So I'm out, so din number one, right? If your mavis kavero bishtar, a loan which takes place with the shtar, you can collect from the chasim mishubadim. Right? Hamavis kavero bishtar gobin and chasim mishubadim. That is din number one. Al yidei eidim. What's al yidei eidim? Right? If the loan took place in front of eidim, but not written in a shtar, but there are eidim present. So, al yidei eidim is going to assume and going to require that these guys show up in court themselves. They can't just rely on the... They can't just rely on the shtar. They need to make sure that there's going to be, that they're actually going to be there if the other person, if the borrower is going to deny that the loan took place.
Yeah. If there's only one aid, he's able to make you have to swear.
Yes. But let's leave that aside for now. That is correct, but I don't want to confuse things. Okay? This is Ayudai Aidim, right? That's what the Mishnah says, it's plural. So what happens if the loan took place? Ayidei Eidim. Ayidei Eidim, Govim and Echasim B'nei Chorin. You can only collect from B'nei Chorin. What are B'nei Chorin?
I guess when you're sharing the land.
The opposite of Meshubadim. And this is the shorish of Eved. This is Yerucherus. It means free property. So it means property that don't have a lien. That does not mean, right? It does not mean that within the borrower's properties that he's actually holding on to, we look to see whether there was a lien or not. It just means that you can't collect from this guy. Right? The Nechasim Bnei Chorin are what this guy actually has in his possession. Okay? So if it's Al Yedei Eidim, no shtar, but yes, witnesses. Now the witnesses come and say, oh, we saw that the loan took place. He denies it. Basically says you have to pay. The lender says, I know that he had a nice geschmack, a piece of baininess. I want that piece of baininess. Now the borrower says, you're right. I had it, but I don't have it anymore. I sold it. Now I only have, the best I have is ziburis. Stuck. You can only collect from the ziburis. Or I have no land. You get nothing. There's no way, if it's Ayin to Aiden, to go past the free lands that he has. You cannot go after the buyer. Yeah.
So it sounds like the shtar is better.
Yes. Yeah. Shtar, we'll call it more powerful.
Yeah, more powerful. Before you said that usually written things aren't accepted and given.
Right.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. The Gemara is going to talk about it. The Gemara is going to figure this out. We're going to just try to figure out what the dinim are, and then we'll put it together to understand them.
Like you said, I don't want to lend money.
Yeah, like, we'll say. The Gemara goes through it. I assume you also. The Gemara will just put it together.
You said like a shtar is as if there are two aided there. That's how bad.
Correct.
It is. But then now that you actually have two aided, that's not as much.
Correct. So we'll have to understand it. No, it's a fair point. Right now, I just want to make sure we get the halachos down of the Mishnah. The halachos down of the Mishnah. And then the Gemara will help us understand it. Yes.
Can you explain what a shivud is one more time?
A shivud means that there is a lien. So for instance, if at the time that the money was lent to the borrower, he had this piece of land. He owned this piece of land. Subsequently, he sold the land and now he has nothing with which to pay. The shivud says that since at the time of the land, I had a relationship because this land was sort of connected to me because I assumed that I could collect from it. That creates rights that I have to collect it from then remain even after the buyer buys it. And now I can go to the buyer and I can take the land from him.
So who decides that there's a lien on ours then?
That's what we have to figure out.
No, meaning any
at this point Chazal decides.
Shouldn't any of so theoretically even if you don't sell them, any of your properties that I can theoretically collect because it's Beinonis should be a lien on it.
There is, but that's not significant. The significance halachically of the lien is only after there is a different concept of a lien within your own properties that actually is called an apotiki.
It just means that it's reserved for you, correct?
Right. So that's what an apotiki. An apotiki means that we arrange a deal beforehand that within my possessions you can collect, even though normally I can decide as the borrower what I want to pay with. If we make a deal and say that my land is going to the apotiki, you can come and say, I want that piece of land. Because that was the deal that we worked out. But normally, in our context, there's no significance to this lien other than, that's what Rashi says. Look what Rashi says. How does Rashi translate the word mishubadim? Mechurim. Because the only nafkamin at this point, the way the Mishnah is dealing with it, is once it's out of this guy's possession.
Right, because I was going to say b'nei chorin.
Because once it's in his possession, he can do whatever he wants with it.
Because then otherwise b'nei chorin, all of the land would be considered mishubadim, and there wouldn't be b'nei chorin if you think about it.
Correct.
So, it, I mean, b'nei chorin,
so don't think that way because you're going to confuse yourself.
It just means that it wasn't sold to another party.
B'nei chorin means that right now it means that, right, property that he has in his own possession, or possessions that he has to pay with.
Second of all, if the guy was like sort of, I think it within Allah that's okay, but it's a little bit shady. If let's say I lend you money,
yes,
and I know that we only did it, we didn't do a shtar,
yes.
So the best you're going to be able to collect for me would be beinonis that I currently that you own, right?
No,
I mean the best I can collect is beinonis that you own.
No,
what do you mean? No,
I can collect anything that you own. If you only have idis, I can go from idis. That was the price right on the bottom of Zion and Vegas.
No, I'm saying the point is, so then you could go and sell your land to somebody else.
Correct.
And then they'll buy it, and then you get it back from them after, just so you don't have to give it.
Well, that's not going to help. Meaning, in the end, I'll get my money.
Yeah, but you won't get, like, let's say there's a better land than you would have wanted.
Yeah, okay, enough. You could do that.
And that's,
again, I don't know if it's...
Is that like, no, that's...
Not sure. I don't know if it's not a nice thing to do, but is there an actual list there? I don't think there's an actual list there. As long as it was a full-fledged sale. If it wasn't a full-fledged sale, then the Beis Din would probably get involved and say you're playing games. But assuming that it was a full-fledged sale and then I buy it back, so, and I already collected, then as long as I collected, then it's fine. Again, in the end, you want to make sure the purpose of the lien is to make sure the Malva gets the money back. Okay, so day number one is the Malva Bishtar collects from Shubadim. If it's like they ate them, connects with B'nai Chorin. What Shila pointed out is very true. They're basically the same. And if anything, maybe ate them in some ways is stronger. So it seems very strange. Now let's look at a third din. Kavayin Hang the base, says the Mishnah. Hotzi alav sav yado shulchayim lo govim nechasim B'nai Chorin. If he takes out, who takes out?
Malva.
Good. The Malva takes out Sav Yodo Shulchayoglo. Sav Yodo Shulchayoglo. What's Sav Yodo Shulchayoglo?
The signature he wrote his own.
It's an IOU, meaning in the signature of the Lov himself, the Lover, right? Here the story was, in the Shtar, the story is, we who signed down here saw the loan take place. But like Avery said before, what about this? The guy himself writes it. He writes it himself. He says, I borrowed this and this money from you on this and this date, and I owe you that money, and he signs it with his signature. So, is there any reason that shouldn't be biblical or not? Right? If I admit that I owe something, then we assume that that you owe it. So here also, if it's Xavier though, it should work as well. What you collect from? Shulchayim govem minechasim b'nei chorin. So if it's a ksav yado case, you also can only collect from b'nei chorin, you cannot collect from mishubadim. These are the three dinim of our Mishnah. Now again, you have to keep in mind, if a Mishnah says a din, right, the Mishnah doesn't tell us, you know, lo tignu, right? You know you're not going to steal. The Mishnah has to be teaching us a chiddush. So clearly, what's the first din of the Mishnah? If it's ayin teish karek tachin nechassim yishubazim, what's the chiddush? That you can collect from a shubadim. That is a chiddush. Meaning without this Mishnah, you would have said, why should this guy lose out? He was an innocent buyer. He was just going about his business. He purchased the other guy's car. Why should he lose out at all? There's no reason he should lose out. Therefore,
he probably bought it at a discount, so he gained, actually.
He only bought it at a discount if it's nechas mishnah. It's a circular.
You're right. Otherwise, why would he buy it? Right. Again for
a circular. So again, on the surface, I would have said, the issue of the loan is between lender and borrower. You, Mr. Borrower, figured out how to pay the money you're obligated. That has nothing to do with me. Kamash malon the Mishnah Chiddush. The Chiddush is the concept of nechasim mishubadim, that even after it's sold, I can still collect from the buyer. Oh. So now, why do I have the second din of the Mishnah? The second din of the Mishnah says that if it's Ayyidei Eidim, you don't collect B'nai Chorin. So what's the Chiddush now of that din? Right? L'chora, I would have said that once I have... Once I have the first din of the Mishnah, once the Mishnah came up with this brand new Chiddush that you can collect even from the property after it's sold. So I would have said, what difference does it make if it's a shtar that has eidim, or if it's the eidim themselves? So I need the Mishnah to teach me that al yedei eidim, it does not collect a mishubadim. Even though that would have been the default if there was no Mishnah, once I have the first halach of the Mishnah that al yedei shtar you collect from nechasim mishubadim, then I need to know what about al yedei eidim. And similarly, ksav yado. Similarly, ksav yado. Because ksav yado is actually more like shtar. It's more like shtar. So even after I tell you that al yedei eidim is not going to get from bnei chorin, maybe I would have said, but maybe it's something about it being written. So if I have a written document that says, I owe you, even though it does not have eidim, I might have bought you kulak from nechasim mishubadim. Kamash Malah, and you collect only from B'nai Chorin. So those are the chidushim of the three dinim. We just have no idea why they're true. But those are the dinim, and that's again in terms of the flow of the Mishnah. Right? Each line of the Mishnah is teaching us something that I may not have otherwise known. Okay, good. Good. Let's look at the Rashi's on Kuf Ayin Hei in the base. Says Rashi. Malva. If the Malva takes out Ksav Yado, Shel Lova, Shehu Chayev Lomamo. If he takes out the handwriting of the borrower that says that he owes him money, if it ain't Kan Edus Acheres, and there is no other Edus here.
What Edus is there before?
Oh, very good. What do you mean, inkan edus acheres? That sounds like there is some sort of edus here. So what do you see then, if that's true?
But they're both considered even.
Well, there's only one signature on it.
Yeah, but he's giving it to you, so you're observing the transaction.
What?
There shouldn't be a difference.
There's no difference, but what do you see? You see, that when you admit that you owe something, that has the status of edus.
Of two witnesses.
Yeah.
Well, that's
huge. So thus, Baldin, Kemeya, Eidin, Dami. We have a concept in Shas that you admitting something in court is as if 100 witnesses say it. As if 100 witnesses say it. So if I admit that I owe the money in court, it's the same as if the Eidin says it. So how does that work? So again, parenthetically, it's not the main point that we're trying to get to today. I'm just, if you read Rashi carefully, you have to say something like this, right? Because he could have just said, "V'ein kan edus." There is no edus. He doesn't say that. says, Ein kan edus acheres. There's no other witnesses. So clearly, Rashi's at least teaching us. Again, it's not the main chiddush that we need for our sugya, but it's very important because every word that Rashi teaches us is important. Is that Ein kan edus acheres means, but there is some sort of edus. What is that edus? His own admitting that he owes him the money.
Well, if you don't have to teach the last case, then it sounds like it's equivalent to the second case.
No, what do you mean? The opposite. It sounds like it's equivalent to the first case. It's written and it has the status of Aedus. So it shouldn't be the same as Shtar, as what Shtar is.
Yes, so then why then after it?
Because it's a different din. Exactly. Right? Now, why is it different than is an excellent question. That's what Rashi is about to get into, the Gemara is going to get into. But now we understand very, very clearly why the Mishnah had to teach it to us, because left to our own devices, we probably would have said, you can collect from Mishubadim. It's no different than Shtar.
So, like, if self-admission is very powerful,
yeah.
And what if you have a case, like, where someone...
That's probably different.
I'm just going to say, like, testimony versus his word, but, like, testimony says, you owe this guy $100. He says, I admit to owing the guy $10.
So does that go to both of us? It's a chiv shuv in that case.
It's a little bit a feel. Okay. So in this case, now here's the bomb. Govim and Hasim and Echorin. So Rashi right away is bothered by what? I just told you that it's a ksav yad. And I told you that it's got edus. So you're wondering how come we're not collecting from Mishubadim. You cannot collect from Mishubadim. Ela milva hakasu bishtar sheyish bo edim. Because the only time you can collect from Mishubadim is if you have a loan which is written in ishtar. Why? Dekevan deika tartei. Since there are two shtar ve'edim, you have the shtar plus you have edus. Mafkile the color ulekuchos hu the absidu anafshayhu. What does that mean? Says Rashi. What does the case number one have that case number three does not have? It has two things going for it.
Or like nickel on the
this case
lender, I guess.
Is shtar plus not idus but idin. Right? You have shtar and you have witnesses. This case you only have witnesses. In this case, you only have shtar. You only have shtar. You don't have witnesses. What difference does it make?
It's equivalent to witnesses.
Says Rashi, it's not equivalent. Why is it not equivalent? Because when you have shtar plus a dim, not a dus, it's different. A dim are witnesses. A dus is testimony.
But a dim give a dus. Same conclusion.
This is the difference. That in the only if you have both of them, mafkele lekala, does word come out that this took place?
What's kala mean?
Cold, the voice. The rumors, people know!
Mikel? Like,
no. No, it's like cold, like a voice. Right? People know what took place. What does it make a difference if people know what took place? Because now that people know that there was a loan, how do people know there was a loan? Because if you have a shtar and you have two walking, talking Aiden who are walking around saying, oh, you know what I did yesterday? I signed on that shtar. Right? And people know that this loan took place, then it is now the buyer's responsibility to look into whether there is a lien on the property or not. And if the buyer, who should be aware, because the kol is out there, because we can assume, halakhically, that if you have two factors, shtar and edim, that people will know that the loan is up, that the loan exists, And therefore, it is now the buyer's responsibility to look into whether he has to be concerned about the lien or not. And if he buys it, knowing that there is a lien, he is taking certain risk. Maybe because of that, he'll purchase it for less money. Maybe he'll say, oh, I know that there's a lien on this property and I may end up losing it, so I'll give you less money and I'll take that risk that you'll have some other assets from which you can pay the loan back, because they can only come to me as a last resort, and I'll make sure that that I protect myself. But, and therefore you can collect from a shubatim. But, in the case where there's only one factor, either only Edim or only the shtar, because in the shtar case, it's the guy himself who's not going to be going around telling the story of the money that he borrowed. Right? So even though his admittance is in the shtar, it doesn't have that factor, the kol factor is lacking. It's only the fact that it's a shtar. That's not enough to send the message out. And therefore, if it's not enough to send the message out, there's no way for the buyer to be even find out that the loan exists. He can't protect himself. Therefore, you cannot collect from the kosim mishu'abot. And that's the difference between case number one. On the one end, there are two factors to contribute to the kol. In case number two and number three, where there is only one, and therefore you can only collect from mishu'abot. Yes, for Jack.
We got asked this question this morning.
And then he disappeared
over there.
Okay.
Why is there no obligation for the seller to tell the buyer that there's a lien?
Again, it's a good question. It's a little bit, as we'll see in the Gemara, it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg kind of question. Meaning, there's no reason for him to have any obligation to tell him if you can't collect from Mishubad. So, which cases are not convenient? In the first case? In the first case, he doesn't have to tell him, because if he doesn't ask, and it's public knowledge, I don't know, maybe he knows. If you're coming to buy a piece of land from me, and I know that it's public knowledge that I borrowed money, first of all, it may not be on the buyer's, on the seller's, you know, radar screen as being such an important factor that that thing exists.
What does that mean? The guy who loses the whole entire purchase he's making.
What?
That's a pretty apparent thing to think about if you're selling someone something that can be taken away the next day.
Well, it can only be taken away the next day if the seller has no other properties. So if the seller is not...
You mean the borrower?
I thought we said we don't know it.
Well, the borrower and the seller are the same person.
Oh, this, okay, fine.
Right? So if the borrower slash seller assumes he's going to have money to pay back the loan, again, he's not always... You guys are a little bit like sort of assuming that he's trying to, you know, rip him off. The reason that he's selling the property might not have anything to do with the loan. The loan had existed long ago. He's selling the property because he's looking to move. He's looking to open up a brand new mega field on the other side of town. So he wants to get rid of the property. The fact is that the lien exists on property, but it's not necessarily his number one priority. That's one. B is that I don't know that you have an obligation. If the guy doesn't ask, and it's not that he's somewhere in the field and it's public knowledge, then I'm not sure if I'm not being obligated to say.
Why would we assume that, like, everybody's talking about the fact that this guy...
So you have to know the times. Again, we can't fully relate. Chazal are very, very clear that when there's a shtar out there and Edim, that people did find out. Why did they find out? Maybe because they wanted to protect each other.
That was like the talk of the town?
I don't know if it was a talk of the town, but it was enough of a talk amongst the real estate people that they knew which lands were... Yeah, in the same way, we could find out information on Zillow or whatever else when we're trying to figure out information, and it's information that otherwise we shouldn't necessarily have. This was how the message got out. Again, we have to accept that as a fact, because we don't understand how the society works.
I think it's proper to tell them. Derek, I guess, Sharon Robinson.
It could be.
We're concerned about the buyer. We've seen that. We should,
Yeah, it could be a nicer thing to tell them. But again, the point is that if he doesn't tell them, it's not the seller's responsibility. The buyer made a mistake.
If the buyer asks, you have to tell them on this later.
Of course. 100%.
Or can you be like, listen, it's not your business?
No, of course you have to tell them. This isn't about tricking anybody. The point here is that given, again, assuming there's no dishonesty, it is the responsibility of the buyer to get this information because it's accessible.
You're right.
And therefore, he should, therefore, the contention comes after the chasam mishabat. What's not clear, however, is what comes first. Meaning, what creates the shibud? Is the shibud created because a loan took place? Well, you have to figure out why the shtar would be different. Meaning, if the only reason that a shtar is different is because people can find out, that's not a reason that the shibud should take place. Meaning, it's a bit circular. Where is it? Right. I mean, this is how I, when we were clarifying through this yesterday, this was how I sort of tried to explain it. The question is, right, the way we're saying it right now, it sounds like the shtar creates the shibud, right? So the question is, does the shtar create the shibud?
Or does the sale?
Right? Or does the loan? The loan is the chlorot create, the can't be the sale.
Like, because until you sell it, who cares? There's an afkamina.
That happens to be true, but you can't say that it was created at the point of the sale because the loan preceded. But what changed between borrower and lender at the moment of the sale? Or does the loan create the shibud? Meaning, I would have thought, right? This, I'll try to elaborate on this, but I would have assumed that when we're talking about a loan, as soon as the loan is made, as soon as the loan is issued, there is now a lien to collect that exists on this piece of land. That's what I would have assumed.
All the land is a lien on, technically.
Correct.
Which is what I was thinking before.
Yeah, that's true. So what? No, I'm saying in terms of this point, then I get the risk.
So then it wouldn't stand out unless you dafka.
What do you mean? All this guy's land. So now people are going to be nervous when they buy any land from Mr. Borrower.
And no one's going to buy people's lands anymore.
Okay.
We're going to close the delas for people buying land.
Again, you're talking about, I want to know Ikar HaDin. I'm not interested in Takana Turban right now. I want to know what creates a shivud. I would have thought that when I'm making a loan, that creates a shivud. Right? That at the moment that you borrow money from me, you have a responsibility to ensure that the money is paid. Part of that is that I have a lien on your land. But if that's the case, then what difference does it make if it's with the shtar or not? Because the whole issue with the shtar has to do with the coal coming out. That doesn't have to do with whether the loan creates it. That's a secondary concern. That sounds like it's the shtar that somehow creates the shibud. Not that a loan exists, but that a loan with a shtar exists. Right? Okay. So that's the question. That's what we need to try and figure out. So now let's look at the Gemara. This is one of the most important Gemaras you'll ever see. Zok the Gemara. You got it? Amar Ula. Amar Ula. Dvar Torah. Not like Dvar Torah, but Dvar Torah. Mina Torah.
Dvar. Yeah.
Echad milva bishter shtar, ve'echad milva al peh, gobe minachasim mishu abodim. Zokt Ula, says Ula, whether the milva is with the shtar, or whether it's done orally, you're allowed to collect minachasim mishu abodim. Because, what does that mean? Oral, no shtar.
No, I know that meaning Eden.
Yeah.
Why does it say it?
Because it's true in Italian. Just you can't prove it without a bet. Okay. Right? Meaning if the same shibud would exist if we just lent it to you and me without having a them, just there would be no proof.
It's just silly because there's no proof.
Right.
The loan creates the shibud.
Ah! So why is this? This is clear that Ula is saying like this side. Right? Ula is saying that the loan creates the shibud. Therefore, in that Torah, it does not matter which of these three cases it is. In all three cases, you collect from the chasim mishubadim. Because every time that you lend somebody money, you now have rights in his land to collect, even if he sells it, if he has no other money. It's against the Mishnah.
And then why the Mishnah have to say what it says?
It's against the Mishnah. So the Mishnah taught us a chiddush. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah? I'm sorry, so why is it true that it's going to the Mishnah? My time is Shibuda Deraisa. Because in the Torah, every loan creates a Shibud. So then how come in case number 2 and case number 3, the Mishnah says that you collect from B'nai Chorin and you don't collect from Mishubadim? Mishum Pseido de Lukuchos. Because we don't want the buyers to lose out. People are going to buy lands. They're not going to know that there is a lien, and they're going to end up losing out. What did they ever do? So it comes along, the Rabbanan says we want to protect the buyers, and the buyers should not lose out. Ihafi, if so, milva bishtar nami. So how come it comes to milva bishtar? Could we not care less about the buyers? Why are we telling the buyer, to heck with you, it's your problem, right? Yeah. How come? Says the Gemara, Hasach inu ninu da'afsidu anashayu. There, the fact that they're going to lose is their own fault. It's their own fault. Inhu, they, inhu ninu, they themselves, basically. The Afsidu and Afshayu cause themselves to lose out. Why? How do they cause themselves to lose out? Because there's a coal. That's what Rashi was telling us before. Because there's a coal. So the first explanation of the Mishnah, Ula says, Shibuda de Oraisa. The Shibud is Minat Torah, meaning every single loan that exists creates a Shibud. Because it's from the loan. How come in case number 2 and case number 3, when there's no shtar, how can we say that the can only come from B'nai Chorin? That's because we want to protect the buyers. Because in those cases, there's no kol. There's no, the word does not come out that there is a lien, and then they have no way to protect themselves. If they have no way to protect themselves, the Rabbanan comes along and says, we have to protect the buyers. Why is Milva Bishtar different? Because Milva Bishtar, there was a call. When there's a call, you have to take some personal responsibility. And since it was in your own hands to make sure that you found out, because the word is out there, you have to do your due diligence, and you didn't, it's your own problem. That's why Milva Bishtar is going to Chasim Mishubadim. And the other cases, we've downgraded. They also should have been Me'ekar Adin from Mishubadim when we downgraded them to B'nai Chorin. Yeah.
So you're saying if there's a coal, the buyer should be aware that there's a coal, and he should be aware that there's a lien on the land, and that he won't buy it?
It's up to him. He can not buy it, or he can make sure that he's going to negotiate a better price that's going to take the risk into account. He will be able to decide what he wants to do. He will not be blindsided. In the other cases, Pseita de Lechukos, there's no way for them to know, and therefore we have to be concerned that they're going to be blindsided, and either that they wouldn't have bought it, or they certainly wouldn't have paid that much money. Therefore, since they can't protect themselves, we limit them to B'nai Chorin, because that's the borrower's own property. Yeah. And you can't go from Mishubadim. Yes?
So basically, it's a rabbinic decree.
Yes.
So then why couldn't they make it I mean, they had two options really. They either what they did was this, or alternatively, they could have just made a decree that you have to tell the guy who's buying it whether there's a lien or not. Wouldn't you think that would make more sense? Because at least you're upholding the derisa. Like, why do you want to take the derisa and like sort of like limit the ability of such and such a party to claim from the issue button? Meaning you're still preventing the issue.
I'm not sure. Good question. I'm not sure. Says the Gemara. So that's the first shita in the Amorai. Rabba comes along and says, Rabba Amar Bar Torah. Min haTorah efanu b'shtar ve'efanu ba'alpeh ina gover elo menachasim b'nei chorin. My time is shibud olam de'oraisa. Rabba comes along and Rabba says, no loan ever creates a shibud. There's no such concept min haTorah. Min haTorah, when the loan takes place, it is completely a relationship between borrower and lender. And the lender can come along and he can take anything that the borrower has in his possession. If the borrower sells all of his things and then somehow gambles away all of his cash and has nothing left to him, the lender lost out.
So the point of the loan?
The point of the loan?
Meaning the things you're entitled to are when you make the when you
let the time go away?
Yeah. Because otherwise, can you just sell everything after and you'll never have to pay you back anything?
Yeah, but you won't have any possessions.
If you don't get money for it.
But then you can pay for your money. Money is meaning as long as it's any asset.
It's incentive.
There's not. It's not gonna have any problem. Oh, so Rabba comes along and Rabba says Shibu does not know right. The Torah does not recognize this concept of liens at all. So therefore, whether it's case one, whether it's case two or three, which is milva peh, you can only collect from v'nei chorin. Uma tamam bishtar. So now what's the kasha? Rabba's also against the Mishnah. Right? Now the kasha is how come in case number one, we're allowing you to collect from mishubadim. Right? Where did this concept of a lien come from? Uma tamam. Chazal had a different concern. Chazal were afraid that if there is no such concept of the lien, and this guy already is in a bad financial situation normally, that's why he's borrowing money, he doesn't have his own money, and now you're telling me that I can't have a lien on his land also, you know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth me lending him any money. And Chazal were afraid that the people are going to stop lending money. Oh wait, that's the concern. So therefore they said, Chazal said, you can collect even from a shubadim. Says the Gemara, but if that's true, why limit it? Ihochi milva penami, hasam lestekala. Even when we want to encourage people to lend, we can't throw the buyer away. We still have to be concerned about the buyer.
That's amazing.
And therefore, only in the case where the buyer would not lose out, are we going to make sure that people are going to continue to lend. But if in order to make sure that people continue to lend, it's going to require us to throw the buyer under the bus, and now he's going to say to the kugos, Chazal never went that far. So again, basically, the shtar creates the shibud. The shibud is created, Chazal said, when you have a milva b'shtar, that creates the shibud. There is no shibud otherwise. The Torah doesn't recognize the concept of shibud. There's no such thing. That's the machlokas between Rabba and Ula, and that we're each going to have to come up with which takana derabanan, or what din derabanan, created the split that we see in the Mishnah between Din 1 on the one hand and 2 and 3 on the other. Yeah, Jack.
Why is it that Gemara mentioned where each is getting his opinion from?
What the Doraisa is?
Yeah.
So Rashi says. So Rashi says. Look at Rashi. says Rashi.
How do you like that?
Says Rashi, Shibuda Doraisa. Yotzi Eilecha Ha'avot V'hu Adin L'mikar Koi. What does that mean? He quotes the pasuk which we had earlier in our gemara. Isha sherata nosheh bo, hutzia lecha esavo tachlutza. Right, they're going to bring out the collateral. Says Rashi, and says Ula. Rashi's explaining Ula. What collateral? What are you talking about? Oh, you know what the collateral is? That all of his things are collateral because of the Shiva Daraisa. That's how Ula understands. Ula's saying that.
Does that guarantee that it would extend to when you sell it to someone? Just because it starts out as a Shiva?
It sounds like that if a Shibud exists, they both agree, both sides agree that if a Shibud would exist, that it doesn't have to go away.
But
the only way for it to go away, because there was a reason, so Chazal undid it, but on its own it wouldn't have been undone. Correct. How do they do that? So again, because it's money, there's a concept called hefker based in hefker. But that's what he says. That's, again, this is Rashi's understanding of where they comes from. And what's Rava going to do with that? Lav de oraisim, ukra b'mishkano shelo b'shas halva aso. And the pasuk must be talking about a case where there was a specific later, not at the time of the loan, it was a specific collateral that was assigned, and that's what's being taken out, and that this pasuk is not teaching us that everything is automatically collateral. Okay. Whether that's a source, other Rishonim, I think, learned a little bit differently. That's not the biggest issue for us right now.
It's amazing.
But again, this concept of the Gemara has taught us, right, is the concept of Shibudim. They all come out the same, but they're coming very different perspectives. Good?
So do we hold it to Dereisa? Like, I mean, do we agree that it's a concept in Dereisa or not?
How do we paskin?
Shibudim, yeah, I'm
just kidding. How do we paskin?
It looks like the Rambam paskin Shibudim Dereisa. The posios here seem to indicate. Again, in Din over here, there's not going to be any nafkamim. They're all coming around the same thing. Yeah.
How come both of Rabba and Yula?
Yeah.
They only bring the case of the Shtar and
Eden. They're assuming that any case which does not have full-fledged Shtar power is considered to be Milval Pet. Yeah. Anything short of Shtar is only as a power of a Milva Alpet.
Oh. It's really insane the amount of sensitivity.
So now with all of this, let's see the Tosfos by us. See if we can see Tosfos by us. Okay? So we said, right at the beginning of the Gemara, right, the Gemara said that if you had, again, if you just remember the context of the Gemara, you have three pieces of land, one of each, and you have somebody that owed each of them, right? You have against you a Ksubas Isha, a Nizakin, and the bachov, and you sell them. So we said, kulan nechnesu tachas, if you sell them all to one guy, then nechnesu tachas abaylam, or if you sell them to three guys, right? Good. Kulan nechnesu tachas abaylam. Says Taisvis, vim tomar, v'ha nizakin mil v'al peninu. Does not understand? How do you have a case of when you have to pay with a zaken? I damaged you, now I have to pay. Is there a shtar? There's no shtar. So now it's money that's owed, I'll pay. If it's money that's owed, I'll pay. Kulon nechnesu tachas abaylim? Now that the guy sells the piece of idis to somebody else, I can collect from him. What are you talking about? If it's a case, even if you had a halva, and it was only all the edim or ksav yodo, we would not allow it to get transferred to the next guy. So how can we say that it gets transferred? It should only be collecting from b'nei chorin. I'm sorry. Hanizakin ala peninu melva pedo gavim mishabde. Now we understand Tosfos' kasha. Now that we know a little bit about shibudim, Tosfos is asking a great kasha. Answers Tosfos v'yishlomar de kishe amad bedin kimilva bishtar damya. Kedamar bagoz abasa bekam meduchten. Inami milvak siva v'tarak k'ksuva b'shtar dam yo v'chay. It says Tosfos, two potential answers. Both answers are the same in that Tosfos realizes, in order to say that the nizakin are able to collect from the iddis after it's transferred, we basically have to say that it's a shtar case. In order to answer the question, we have to say that it's a shtar. So we just need to figure out, well, how do we make it into a shtar? The Tosfos says two suggestions how we make it into the shtar. Suggestion number one is that after the Beis Din Paskins, Kesha Omat the Din, that the money is owed, then it takes on the status of a Milva Mishtar. Why? Presumably, what?
To aid him, I guess.
Because then it has everything, I think, right? At that point, it has everything. Kesha Omat the Din, if it's now, the Beis Din is going to write up a document, then people are going to know when they were aid him, and it's completely public, so it has the same status as shtar. That's the first answer. The second answer is a little bit more complicated. It has to do with a different sugya, but basically says, Milva ksuva b'shtar, b'torah ki ksuva b'shtar dam yomichayim. Any chiyuv that the Torah obligates,
which would be
nizikin as an example, is automatically like
shtar.
So I think on the one hand we understand that,
because what stronger chiyuv can there be than that the Torah is obligating it?
On the other hand, the more that it has to do with kol, then we haven't really answered anything. Right? Again, right? If the idea is that we just want to show the strength of it, so then we understand that milvav ksuva v'torah is ksuva b'shtar danya. The Torah says it, so the Torah saying there's an obligation to pay is not much different than a shtar saying there's an obligation to pay. But if the focus of why shtar has its power is because of the kol, then there is a little bit of a weakness in this answer. Maybe that's why Tosfos has the other answer as well. But, more important is understanding Tosfos' kasha. Because without the background of understanding what the shibudim are, so I don't think we can appreciate what Tosfos' question is. Now that we understand everything, not everything, but an awful lot about Shibudim, and Tosfos is asking an excellent kasha. How can it be by Nezek, by Nezikin, that the Chov is going to be transferred? And Tosfos gives his answer. Either it's Amar B'din, or Muvak Tzuvah is Kikul B'Shtar Damyon. And therefore, basically he's answering that Nezikin is different. And Nezikin, therefore, can still be transferred. Okay. Shkoyach Rav Usai, we will pick up Imirtza Hashem.